Okay, our final speaker is Dr. Hardwar Murano from the University of North Carolina, and she is an occupational and environmental epidemiologist who has worked with state health departments for over a decade. She received her MPH in biostatistics from Boston University and her doctorate in epidemiology from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Dr. Hardwar Murano currently works for North Carolina's Syndromic Surveillance System. She also does work as an independent contractor with state health departments, specifically on projects related to occupational health and climate change. So, welcome.
Thank you so much. I was just talking to Katie, and maybe we should have switched our presentations. So, the work that I'm going to present here, some of it was used in the climate projections. So over the last 20 years, there's been a lot of information that is about the heat-health relationship. Unfortunately, the majority of the information has been conducted in northern climates. And when it has been conducted in lower latitudes, it's been done in urban areas. So there's very little information on the relationship between heat and heat-related outcomes in warm and humid climates, especially non-urban areas. I'm sorry. So within the literature, there are two types of analyses that are consistently conducted. There's the analysis looking at continuous daily temperature or daily heat index over time in relation to daily heat-related outcomes. And then there's analysis of episodic events, such as heat waves. Only a few studies have looked to see if there is an additional effect of heat waves after accounting for the daily heat. This is especially important in lower latitudes as it's continuously hot in the summer. And there may not be an effect of contiguous days above an intensity threshold. Additionally, the majority of these studies have used mortality data and hospitalization data, starting to see a little bit more of the emergency department data and some ambulance call data that are looking at that. But all of these different data sources, the medical severity and the demographics are different. So if we look at those sources in isolation, then we're going to be seeing a different picture of the heat-health relationship, and which may be potentially biased when we're trying to apply this to an entire population. So, and finally, very little epidemiologic research has been conducted looking at the civilian working population. There are a number of subgroups who are at high risk of heat-related outcomes due to their job duties, their work environment, and the protective clothing that they are required to wear. So this work that I'm going to present here touches a bit on all of these specific research gaps. And it arose out of a need by public health practitioners in Florida for Florida-specific knowledge. So the aims of this is to model the relationship between heat and HRI, which is heat-related illness, morbidity, and mortality in Florida. And I'll be doing this in three steps. First, I'll be looking at continuous daily temperature or heat and daily heat-related illness. Then I'll be looking at the effect of heat-related illness during a heat wave. And finally, combining the two of them to see if there is an increase in HRI morbidity and mortality that is modified by a heat wave. In effect, that is there an effect of contiguous days of high temperature or high heat? So the study population was all Florida residents. The time period was restricted to the warm months for May through October, which is the Florida warm season, for the year 2005 to 2012. The Florida population was estimated using the American Community Survey, or the ACS, and the unit of observation was the zip code level. We used the five-year averages for the community survey. That was the 2007 to 2011, because that's what was available for this, a good period smack dab in the middle, and assumed a constant population. So the outcomes that we obtained were ED visit data, hospitalization data. Both of these were obtained from our Agency for Healthcare Administration through a data user agreement. ED visits were those that were treated and released, and hospital discharge data were all admits regardless of source. We also obtained death certificate data from our Office of Vital Statistics. The residential zip code was used, And the cases were defined as HRI diagnosis of a code 992, which is heat exhaustion, heat stroke, et cetera, heat edemia. And we also included external cause of injury codes, E900s. So that includes those that were due to heat, those that were due to man-made heat, and those that were unknown specified for heat. So stratification, as I mentioned, there is little epidemiologic evidence for occupational HRI, and as such, the study stratified on work-related status. So within the morbidity data, work-related cases were identified by the expected payer as workers' compensation and a number of work-related E-codes. Within the death certificate data, work-related and HRI death was if an injury at work box on the death certificate was marked yes, and then all work-related HRI cases were restricted to those aged 16 years or older. So our exposure data, hourly data was obtained from 56 National Weather Service stations, and those are the black dots on this chart here. And then there were 36 Florida Agricultural Network stations, or FON stations. These are our mesonet sites that are not maintained by the National Weather Service or NOAA. And those are the red dots, and they have a lot more information in our agricultural or rural areas. Now, note that the state was divided into seven regions, the National Weather Service regions, with Key West being its own region down here at the bottom. And I will be using these later in the analysis. So maximum daily heat index was used as the heat metric. The heat index was linked to the health data by assigning a weather station to each zip code, and that was linked using the zip code centroids. Now, I also did analyze maximum daily temperature, which was used in the projection estimates that Katie talked about, but heat index provides a better fit when looking at the heat-health relationship within Florida, and so those are the results that I will be presenting today. So here's some distributional information about the for heat index and the exposure. You can see on the y-axis the different regions within the state, with Pensacola being at the top of the state and Key West being down at the bottom of the state. The thick black vertical lines on each of the boxes is the median, while the asterisks are the mean. And on the bottom of the graph, on the x-axis, we've got heat index ranges from 46 to 122. And you can basically see that as latitude decreases, the heat index increases. However, there's a lot of variability up in the northern part of the state. So the statistical analysis that I used was a generalized linear equation or linear model with an overdispersed Poisson distribution. The unit of analysis was a zip code day. Two outcomes were used for daily HRI counts. And so in this analysis, I went ahead and combined all the morbidity data. So ED and hospitalizations are combined together. And then looked at HRI morbidity as well. HRI mortality. So although for the sake of the time, I really won't be presenting the mortality results, but they are in the appendix if you get a chance to look at this online. The exposure varied by sub-aim, and so I will discuss those a little bit later within each aim. The offset term was included in the model to estimate rates, and because I stratified on work-related status, the civilian population employed at work and employed absent was used as the denominator for that set, while for non-work-related HRI, I used the entire Florida population. Temporal confounding was addressed with the inclusion of three terms, an indicator term for year, an indicator term for day of week, and a restricted cubic spline function for day of year with 5 knots. A two-stage analysis was conducted. For the first stage, the statistical analysis was conducted at the sub-regional level. And for the second stage, a random effects meta-regression was used to provide pooled statewide estimates. And the reason that this was done is to help account for some of the variation that you see at the sub-regional level, and since that wasn't implicitly involved into the modeling. So the results. So first aim, as I said, I'm looking at if there's a positive relationship between heat index and daily HRI. Now, the exposure in here was modeled as a piecewise linear parameterization, which is two straight lines below and above a breakpoint of 101 degrees Fahrenheit for non-work-related HRI and 99 degrees Fahrenheit for work-related HRI. A piecewise constant function with an indicator term for every 2 degrees of heat index was also modeled to provide information about the actual shape of the exposure response curve. And the model included both the current day's heat index and the prior day's heat index. Now, we did look at additional lag periods, but these are the ones that actually had an impact on heat-related illness or predicted heat-related illness. So here's some of the results. So let me orient you to this figure because there's a lot of information here. So I've stratified the results by lag 0 and lag 1. The x-axis is heat index, which ranges from about 80 to 122. And the top of the figure is a histogram representing the number of work-related, of non-work-related HRI cases for each heat index degree. And as you can see, there are very few cases that are occurring above 110 degrees Fahrenheit. The lower y-axis is the rate ratio, where the reference is 81 degrees Fahrenheit. The parameterization results in the linear segment below and above the breakpoint. The gray dots are the region-specific ratios for every 2 degrees of heat index. Now, the chart to the right provides, or I guess that's on the left on your side over there, provides the estimated slope for each of the linear line segments. So for non-work-related morbidity, a positive relationship with HRI was observed, with the majority of the effect occurring on with the current day's heat index. For the lag, zero, below the breakpoint, there was a 9% increase in the rate of heat-related illness as heat index increased, while above the breakpoint, there was a 6% increase. So here are the results for work-related morbidity. Again, the majority of work-related HRI cases were below 110 degrees Fahrenheit. The largest effect was for a lag of zero. Below the breakpoint, there was a 13% increase in the rate of work-related HRI morbidity, while above the breakpoint, a 6% increase in the HRI rate was observed. So in summary, there is a relationship in Florida, a positive relationship is observed between HRI and heat index. The rates of HRI are most strongly associated with the same day heat index. A nonlinear association was observed, with a slightly smaller increase in the slope occurring above the breakpoint, potentially suggesting that there may be some form of adaptation that is occurring at higher, heat values. And finally, as I mentioned but did not show, the heat index, which incorporates humidity, was a better metric of heat than temperature in Florida. So the second aim that I was looking at HRI during heat waves. Now, we needed a heat wave definition because there is no consistent definition of heat waves that is out there right now, although they are usually defined by intensity and duration. So in this case, our intensity threshold was the 95th and 99th percentile of the maximum daily heat from May to September that was calculated by our climatologist in Florida over using all available data for the last 60 years. By weather station. We also used a constant threshold value of 108 degrees across the state, and this value is currently used by our National Weather Service to issue advisories, heat advisories. Now, duration was defined as 2 or more days above the intensity threshold or 4 or more days above an intensity threshold. This comparison was specific to each definition, so comparing heat wave days compared to non-heat wave days. And among the different definitions, I wanted to identify the largest magnitude of effect while minimizing the variance. So note that 2 or more days above the threshold was determined to be the best definition of duration, and so that is what I'll be presenting here, although the 4 or more days is in the appendix. So for this figure, each row represents a heat wave definition. The second column is the percent of study days that were classified as a heat wave day. Only a small proportion of heat wave days occurred during the study, and as listed in the figure, only 2.3% of study day periods occurred with the broadest definition of heat waves. This broad definition also had the largest percentage of non-work-related HRI cases, as 5.8% of all cases seen during our study period. And I just want to put as a side note that there were 5 non-work-related deaths that occurred that had exposure during the heat wave period for the 95th percentile. So here are the figures, the forest plot that provides the results of the analysis. The gray lines are the variances, and the boxes are the effect estimate. And note that the size of the box increases with decreasing variance. For non-work-related HRI, the largest magnitude of effect was for the constant threshold, followed by the 95th percentile, while the variance for both were very similar. For work-related morbidity, 6.7% of HRI cases occurred on a heat wave day, defined by the broadest definition. Also to note, there were only 2 work-related deaths with exposure during the heat, with exposure on a heat wave day, so very few. And you can also see that the magnitude of effect and variance were largest for the 99th percentile, while the effect estimate and the variance were smallest for the 95th percentile. So in summary, HRI rates do increase during a heat wave in Florida, but regardless of definition, the majority of HRI cases that we're seeing are outside of a heat wave. They occur on non-heat wave days. Heat waves in Florida should be defined by a duration of 2 or more days and using a relative or constant threshold. So aim 3, what about the additional effect of those contiguous days of high heat? So this last question I included both daily heat index as defined in AIM 1, and that included the lag periods, and then I also included a binary term for heat wave as defined in the previous section. With the 2 terms in the model, the question is, after adjusting for daily ambient heat on heat wave days, was there an effect compared to non-heat wave days? So 2 statistical tests were used to determine this answer, the AIC and the Z-test. And basically what I'm trying to figure out or use was to determine if, was to see if the AIC had a better fit with which model, and to look to see if the Z-test, which is variable specific, and test the hypothesis that the natural log of the heat wave term is equal to 0, indicating no effect. So the results of this, you can see in the first column, it indicates the different models. The last 3 rows have both a term for ambient heat and heat waves. In the second column, while the effect estimate may suggest that there is a reduction in HRI rates, especially for the 99th percentile and the constant threshold, the confidence intervals indicate otherwise. The Z-score also supports the idea that there is no association. None of the natural log of heat wave terms were different from 0, as indicated by the Z-score. And finally, the AIC was smallest for the model that did not include a heat wave term. Work-related HRI morbidity, the results were similar. The model without a heat wave term was the best, indicating that no heat wave effect was observed. So to summarize, there is no additional effect of contiguous days of high heat in Florida. So even in the hot and humid climate of Florida, there is a positive relationship between HRI morbidity and HRI and heat. One of the relevant findings of this work is the importance of incorporating humidity into our analysis. In Florida is one of the most humid, is the most humid state in the nation. And by not accounting for humidity, the estimated relationship or the heat-health relationship may be biased. My work indicates that after accounting for the current and prior day's heat values, there was no additional effect of contiguous days of high heat. However, within this study, I only looked at HRI, morbidity, and mortality. It is possible that there may be effect during these heat waves or additional effect on contiguous days when you look at other heat-related outcomes, such as those that may have been associated with cardiovascular or renal outcomes. The Florida-specific heat wave definition observed or identified in the study will provide a good exposure window that can be used in future studies. So the strength of this analysis is that this study filled both a gap in the literature and Florida-specific health knowledge. The study population was located in a humid and hot and humid climate. And to the best of my knowledge, this really is the largest subtropical analysis that has been conducted looking at the heat-health relationship. The study population included both urban and rural areas because we looked at the entire state. Many studies only use the National Weather Service data, but these are not evenly distributed across the state. And so the addition of the Mesonet sites, those FON sites, was very beneficial and helped pull in some of the weather information or the climate information from our rural and agricultural areas. So if you're doing an analysis in your state, I would highly encourage you to find out where your Mesonet sites are and see if you can get that information and incorporate it into your analysis. There were three data sources that were used for this analysis, which gave a more complete estimate and allowed us to have a better picture of what is occurring with the heat-health relationship in Florida. And finally, to the best of my knowledge, this is the second study globally to examine the heat-health relationship in the civilian working population. So I encourage you, when you do your own analyses of heat of the heat-health relationship, look at that occupational component. Look at work-related. Look to see, pull out your work-related cases because they are probably different from your non-work-related cases. And they are an important subpopulation to be looking at. So the limitations of the study, even though we got additional information from the Mesonet sites, they still are not evenly dispersed across the state, and there's still a lot of missing information. So we're assuming a homogeneous exposure for a lot of our area. So we also have some outcome measurement misclassification. So HRI was identified by administrative codes and has been noted to be underdiagnosed. As a heat exposure may not be critical in treatment of patients, it may not be included in the record, so we'd have no information whether we're missing or not missing. And doctors may be more likely to note heat exposure or assign an HRI diagnosis if they are aware of prolonged increases in temperature or an increase in extremely hot day. The degree to which this occurs, if it does occur, is unknown and is likely to vary by region and facility. And the impact of this on measurement error is very unclear. And finally, I use residential address instead of actual location. There isn't any information that we have within the morbidity data to go ahead and figure out what we're looking at. However, a sensitivity analysis was done with the death certificates, and it indicated that among death certificates with both residential and injury zip codes, 50% of those events occurred in the same zip code, so the zip code, the resident, they incurred within the zip code of residence. And among those that had different zip codes, the mean approximate distance between zip code centroids was approximately 27 miles. So that gives some idea. But then again, that's the death certificate data. And the death certificate data has different demographics than those in the emergency department or hospitalization data. So take that information with a grain of salt. And finally, the results of this analysis will help inform the timing of public health prevention and intervention activities within Florida. As I mentioned, the focus should be over the entire warm season and on subpopulations who may be at the highest risk or on reducing vulnerability to increasing heat within populations. Now, many jurisdictions across the country and the globe are implementing heat health warning systems. And these systems are activated at a particular intensity threshold or particular and duration. And that may include ramping up of prevention activities such as providing cooling shelters or activating incident command systems. And this may not be the best approach in Florida. It may be better to help the public to remember to take precautions over the entire summer, encourage acclimatization, working up to it. If you've been on vacation or gone somewhere and you're not in that heat, before you go back to work, take a little bit of time, work up slowly, take rest breaks. When you're looking at our children who are doing their outdoor activities, give them a little bit of time, making sure those coaches are aware of the symptoms of heat-related illness, looking at when we're scheduling our marathons or other outdoor activities, things like that. And finally, as communities prepare for the impact of climate change, we could use this data in projections, which we have, and that's pretty awesome. So thank you very much, and I will go ahead and take some questions.
I did have one on time of day. Did you look specifically at different, like, nighttime temperature versus daytime temperature when you're doing your calculations?
I did not look at daytime and nighttime temperatures, and I believe that that diurnal cooling is very important to whether or not somebody is going to have a heat-related illness, because you really need to have that time when you can cool down and when the night cools down. The problem with that is that a number of our stations that we have only collect data during business hours, so 8 to 5. And so in order to do a statewide analysis, we went with where we had the majority of the data, which is maximum daily temperature that is occurring probably within those business hours. So at some point, I hope somebody can do that type of analysis, and I agree it should be done, to look at diurnal temperatures.
I'm Lori Cameron from Michigan. Really nice presentation.
Thank you. Very elegant.
I did have a couple of questions. I think you kind of alluded to this, but I just wanted to clarify in my own mind. When you got your cases, did you just use the underlying cause and the primary diagnosis, or did you look at all cause and all diagnoses? And if you didn't do that, how do you think that would have changed your results?
So when I did get the data, we looked, Florida has, I believe, 20-some diagnosis fields and 3 E-code fields, and we looked for heat-related illness in all of the diagnosis fields, and we used E-codes, looked for E-codes in all of the diagnosis fields. There have been some papers that have shown that by not looking at those, you're even more undercounting the number of cases, because often somebody who's presenting with a heat-related illness, the symptom that's occurring may be a cardiovascular event or a renal event, and so that's what's going to be ending up in your primary diagnosis, because that's what's going to be treated. So.
And similarly for the deaths, you looked at all
I did.
Contributing causes.
I did. I looked at all underlying and contributing for the deaths as well.
So one more question, if you'll indulge me. I'm interested in your comments about the MISO stations and how you were trying to get better coverage.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the tracking portal has smoothed heat data, and I'm not sure how they do the smoothing. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but I wonder if you could comment on the differences between what you did and using the smooth data, if you know what the smooth data is.
I do know what the smooth data, and I can give you my ideas. I'm not sure exactly how the smooth data has been calculated on the tracking portal. I know that's a good thing, and I know that they have started to look to see how it compares. I don't have the results of it. I do know that when we started this project, one, that smooth data wasn't available, and two, when we talked to our climatologists down in Florida, some of the methodologies that might have been used in smoothing the data, which I am not saying that are being used with the EPHT data, the smooth data is on there, but were not appropriate. So we went with the methodology and the ideas that our climatologists thought would be best.
I know when I talked to our climatologists in Michigan, they were real nervous about using non-certified station data because they thought the quality of that data was poor, and I don't know if that was an issue you had to address with the MISO data.
The quality of data that we have within our FON data is actually very good. And our state climatologists, they work with them on that, or aware of it. So we were pretty happy with the quality of it. There was very little missing data. In fact, it was a lot easier to clean and deal with than it was from the first order weather stations from the ASAW and AWAS stations.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Hi, Laurel. Great presentation. A lot of it is new to me, and I didn't get it all. And actually, what I'm asking for here is some clarification, because maybe I misunderstood. It seemed like part of your analysis suggested that the data that you were using, whether it was mortality or morbidity, suggested that the cases may have presented after the heat passed. And I'm wondering, is that potentially, if maybe I totally missed that, but if that was the case, is that possibly because they were impacted but didn't get around to being taken to or going to a healthcare facility until the next day? Could that be a confounding factor?
Yeah.
Or did I just totally misunderstand?
No, you didn't totally misunderstand. So there is some temporal confounding that is occurring with when the cases are showing up. So we are at the limitation of the fact that we're using emergency department data. So when the person shows up, that's when we say their exposure was, which may not actually be the case. Somebody may be feeling ill. They, go home. We're going to rest, see how we're doing. And then maybe somebody will take them to the emergency department or take them to the hospital. So there is that potential that's going on, which is why I tried to include some of the lag days. So that's occurring. And within the hospitalization data, I use the date of ED admission for those who were admitted to the ED through the ED, so that helps with that a little bit. Within the death certificate data, because heat-related illness is an injury, they have the date of injury. And so that is listed on there, and I use that in cases as well. And there was some discrepancy between the date of death and the date of injury, which would occur because, you go to the hospital, you're in the hospital for a while, and then unfortunately you may pass away from that. So that's one thing. Then there's also the fact that heat-related illness can be cumulative, especially in elderly individuals or individuals who are not able to thermoregulate as well, or in areas where there isn't the air conditioning or ability to have cooling, and it may develop over a longer period of time. So if it's hot on the previous day and then it's hot on this day, then there is the potential that they haven't had that cooling effect, and so they're going to end up, that previous day's impact is going to impact whether or not they end up in the ED hospital. And then also the fact, because there's a lot of limitations on this, is that I am not using the time that they entered the hospital. So it's possible that they may have entered the hospital at 9 a.m., but the maximum daily temperature that I was using occurred at 3 p.m., and so all of those are definitely limitations, but, this is our general best model.
So, and it also seems that with workers, you may have that cumulative effect as well.
Yes.
They didn't, they were impacted on one day where it started to get out of control. They didn't either rest or cool or hydrate enough, came back to work, and the additive exposure, even if the temperature was slightly less, still could have thrown them over.
Yes, that is definitely true with workers, that there is that cumulative experience with heat, that may happen. They go home, they come back, and it's, they don't get the cooling that they need to. And
good.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.